This podcast is from heptagonclub.co.uk and paulcarenza.com. The Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club with Paul Carenza. Seven guests, seven corners.
On this week's show.
If you go to Comic-Con, usually as a stormtrooper, get your bum squeezed twice.
In front of millions of people watching on television. Knowing you've got no choice but to do it.
I was like, how'd you do that?
And your host,
Mr. Paul Carenza.
Hello there, world. Welcome to podcast number 23. Number 23 was bad news for Jim Carrey in that film. What was it called? Number 23, that's right. Partly because the film was a bit of a stinker. But this is no stinker. This is a doozy, which I think is meant to be a good thing. I don't know. I only know doozy from Groundhog Day when Ned Ryerson says, watch out for that first step. It's a doozy. I think it's meant to be a good thing. But then Bill Murray steps into a puddle of water. So who really knows? No puddle here, though. Just seven fabulous guests. No topic. No agenda. Just chats. And I sometimes think we should have themed this podcast a bit more. Made it about, I don't know, you know, behind the scenes of comedy. But there are loads of those. Or, you know, where religion and media meet. But then you've got the Signal podcast, if you want that. Or, you know, I've got another idea, actually, for a podcast that's a bit, should we say, Dickensian. But I can't really do that easily while I've got this here Heptagon Club up and running. So while these doors remain open, my Dickensian idea would probably stay behind sealed doors. But who knows? We'll see. The future's bright. You join me outside. I'm on a little Heptagon Club expedition at the minute, out enjoying the lovely autumn, rainy October weather. It's one of those busy old months. You just got to grab things when you can. And right now, it's an outside, very foggy pea super of a day because this month is rather busy. Lots going on here. My new book is out this very week, in fact. What Are They Doing Down There? It's a little book of one-liners, thoughts, observations, general nonsense and fab cartoons by the brilliant Dave Walker, who we should get on this podcast. Yes, but we'll get you a copy now anyway. Pause this. Go and get a copy of What Are They Doing Down There, the book, and then come back. You may then proceed. Other goings on this month, this week, in fact, I've been busy doing the Christian Resource Exhibition. That's tomorrow as I record this. There's the Church Media Conference this week as well. Been at the House of Lords as well. Fancy. Maybe more on that in future, depending on how that goes. Christmas, as of course, come early, as it always does with me. So I've started my infamous History of Christmas talks based on last year's book, Hark, The Biography of Christmas. Such fun to geek out about Santa Scrooge and Slade and Snow. And do book my Christmas talk, by all means. It's on in Guildford and Woking and Hink this year, or it could be elsewhere if you'd like to book it. So that's something you could do. Comedians and Carols is up and running very soon as well. Go to comediansandcarols.com, new website, listing all the Comedians and Carols shows this year. See where we are if we're coming to an area near you, and come and see us in November and December. Plus December 7th this year in Guildford. It's the only performance currently of my new play, Three Wise Men, hoping to launch that far bigger. But I need the brains of a big shot theatre producer, or indeed a small shot theatre producer. If you happen to know theatre and can make that happen, come along and see the show. And if you like it, then let's get that play places. Oh yes, see you on Broadway, or for now, Guildford, December the 7th. That's called Three Wise Men. You can Google that for details. Back to this podcast, though. We have crammed this episode full of seven brilliant wonders of the world, including a comedy legend who did Britain's Got Talent, made the semi-finals this year. Very good indeed. He's been brilliant for years, but now more people know of him. That's the one-liner wonder, Noel James. Also someone that you could flippantly call the Star Wars vicar. There's far more to him than that, but that's Chris Rogers, founder of the Ship of Fools website, where comedy meets religion, Simon Jenkins. We've got the beatbox entrepreneur and founder of BuzzKit, the new web resource for beatbox wannabes. That's Gav Tight. Paul Bell, the musician, with his new album First Light. Comedians Tony Vino, Nathan Ramsden Locke. Oh, so many things. Now, I have noticed, though, these are all men. I feel shameful about this, but I feel I should add an explanatory note. I had three female guests lined up, and all of them had to cancel or pass or postpone or whatever, just because they're too dang busy. I didn't take it as anything personal, but other stuff came in. Fair play to them. They are very busy people, as are many. But this podcast can't afford to pay its guests, unfortunately. It can't afford to pay me, let alone anyone else. We do, in fact, make a hefty loss on this podcast. You can feel free to help if you'd like make that loss less by visiting heptagonclub.co.uk, clicking on donate, or we have a Patreon button on the top of heptagonclub.co.uk for a regular donation from you. You would get things in return. There are perks and wonders, a say in what we do. You can help to cover our costs, because this does cost me. Lest it cost me reputation too, though, let me reassure that, yes, we are all male this week, simply because the female guests I could find, they were planned. They were too busy. They were wondrously too busy. Marvellous for them. But we couldn't do the interview just now, after all. So you're stuck with the men. So sorry about that. But what men we have? Oh, well, first up, you might have seen him on BGT or on the comedy circuit for the past 20-ish years. He's an unsung hero of British comedy. Do seek him out. Book him. Doff your cap to Welsh wonder, Mr. Noel James. So I'm here on the podcast with Mr. Noel James.
My Carenza.
Nice.
I'm all right, thanks, Paul.
I've never had that particular theme tune. That's nice. I like that. I've had occasionally the Lion King, the poor Carenza, but not the My Sharona. That's nice. You've been gigging for, I don't know, how long you've been gigging?
I was, if you remember, last year, I was going by train everywhere and bus.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Occasionally hiring a car. Yeah. But I've bought a car off Steve Best, the comedian.
Oh, really?
Second-hand
car. I didn't
know
that comedians exchange cars. This is nice.
Exchange money for a car.
Well, of course.
And it's a really nice, even though it's 2003, it's taken me to Scotland twice already and back.
Has he left any props in there? Is there any Steve Best?
He's left a little dolphin, which I hang from the rear view mirror and have christened Steve.
Nice.
And he's left a bag of CDs, but maybe you shouldn't reveal that.
Let's not talk about
that. Probably want them back.
For the best.
Yeah, it's rather seedy.
That's what it's all about.
And you're very busy as usual, Paul.
I'm busy enough, but I'm not gigging as much at the minute now. You see, you're putting the miles in. You know, I've just been lazy, just staying in Starbucks and writing jokes.
Yeah.
But no, you seem to be travelling a lot forever. You must have.
Well, as much as I can these days. Yes. I was fortunate enough to. I did the Old Britain's Got Talent,
yes,
and it went quite well.
So how? So
in
that was
May,
you got to
and
the semi-final.
Yeah.
Semi-final,
and since then, I have been getting a lot more offers than I was this time last year. I'm not sure how long it's going to last, and so that's why I bought the car, and I just keep going now to remote places if I need to, and I'm busy till the end of the year. Yeah.
More Noel James in a mo on his Britain's Got Talent experience. First, though, before we hear that, let's mingle just outside here in the Heptagon Club, enjoying the autumn weather. We're taken outside this time, and over here, another of our seven guests. It's Chris Rogers, writer, speaker, vicar, and part-time stormtrooper. He's a sci-fi fan, and he's a part-time prop maker, and look, he's over there.
We went to a thing called Star Wars Celebration, which was this massive celebration of Star Wars in East London where thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people turned up. And I met a group of people called the 501st Legion of Stormtroopers. And they go to places like Great Ormond Street Hospital and charity events, and they use that to raise money for charity. So their strapline is bad guys doing good.
Oh, nice.
And I thought they were awesome.
Yes.
And I turned to my wife a few years ago and said, I'd love to make myself a stormtrooper costume. Like, the bar for them is so high that you're not making a replica. You are making a armour that is so precise to the movie, it could have been used in the movie.
Right. Yeah.
Down to the mistakes in the armour. You replicate the mistakes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's a popper that doesn't do anything that you have to put in your armour.
Right, okay.
Because that's what they hid in the movie. Yeah. So she agreed, and I built, and I got the actual plastic moulds from the guy who made the moulds for the original movie in 1976.
So you've made this. This isn't you going sending off to a...
Yeah, so I got the kit and built it so it fits around me, and then I joined. I actually got turned down the first time I applied. It wasn't quite right.
Oh, really?
So they anally kind of go over your kit. So I joined now a couple of years ago, and I joined because I needed something that was for me. Everything I do is about everybody else. I needed something that would fill my soul. So I did this.
And stormtrooper is it. That's
so amazing. I now go stormtrooping a number of times a month to charity events. Great Ormond Street is my favourite, where you go and you get to go around the wards. And you go to the wards where it's children and it's terminal.
Right.
So you know these kids, they may not be there the next time you go.
Wow.
So sometimes it's really emotional.
Yes.
And we end up, we've had Lego sponsor these trips quite a few times. So we take Lego in and we give Lego out to the kids. And it's really powerful. And seeing how those without faith do good is really interesting. And how sacrificial they are in the work that they're doing for charity.
When I was a kid, I was in Great Ormond Street in for quite a while, I think 2 or 3 months at a time, missed a bit of school. You know, obviously I've come through it all now and that's sort of great, but we had Arsenal football team and all this.
Yeah.
Celebrities that often as a five-year-old, I didn't know, have a clue who they were, really great that they would come in and give up their time and stuff. And totally, it just lifted the spirits of the people who were there. And the staff as well as the kids. It just brightens it.
The Heptagon Club.
Seven guests, seven corners. The Heptagon Club with Paul Carenza.
How was your BGT experience then? Was it everything you thought it would be and more? Or was it everything you thought it would be and less?
Well, it's easy to look back on it and think, oh, you know, it went this way and it went that way. But
you did phenomenally. I mean, that's, you can't argue with semis, can you? Really, that is.
It was quite a scary thing to do, a gamble. Yep. I didn't really want to do it. A few years ago, I would have not been seen dead doing that thing because, of course, they can edit it and they can humiliate you and they can misunderstand you and the judges can give you a buzz after a few seconds if they choose to. You know? So it was a gamble. But I think because of the Deliso Chipondo.
He was a year before you.
Yeah, and he came third.
He did well.
And then because of David Walliams seems to sort of take comedy a bit more seriously than the others and he influences the others, I thought it was worth... And really, I did it because I was... desperate. I mean, you were faithfully giving me gigs now and then, which is great, but a lot of people, I was struggling to get clubs to give me work, you see.
Thing is, I think you've been gigging for so long, you're such part of the furniture, the comedy furniture, that clearly people are not appreciating the furniture in the way they should be.
They're not.
You know,
they're not. And probably the commode in the corner.
Do you think?
Yeah.
This is it. But you know, it's good that it's got you out there again and gone. It's just
got me out there.
People.
It's a good platform. Good platform.
I think it just reminds people sometimes to go, oh yes, we've got this that guy.
I think it did remind people.
You've always been beloved on the circus.
You are. Because what was really nice about the semi-final was it was completely live, and therefore the whole day of rehearsing and worrying and stressing out about what's going to happen, knowing that you have to go out there in front of millions of people who are watching on television, knowing you've got no choice but to do it, it was like a do or die situation. So it gave me confidence as well just to do that.
And I suppose there's that relief. There's no editing. They can't edit.
They can't edit.
They can't change
exactly
how it goes for you.
It's live, completely live. Yeah. And if you notice, they went over the script beforehand. They censored things, so I couldn't do certain innocuous jokes about dyslexia or colourblindness because of politically correct reasons. They said if I myself was diagnosed with it, then I could say it, but I'm not.
So. Okay.
But if you notice in the final, when Robert White got to the final, which was also live, of course he's autistic. I believe he's gay, so he can do references about those things.
Yes.
But he also threw in an improvised song about. To Simon Cowell. Mm. Simon Cowell was being awkward and wouldn't answer him when he asked him how old he was. And the lyric then came, oh, Simon Cowell, he's an old timer, he's suffering from Alzheimer's.
Ah,
now, I found that interesting because it was live. There's no way they can stop him saying
that. Well, that's true. So, arguably, you could have said whatever you wanted, of course, but they could have, I mean, if it was outrageous completely,
but
they could
cut
you off.
It was a nice challenge.
If you go to Comic Con, you usually, as a stormtrooper, get your bum squeezed twice.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And they don't have armour plating around?
There is, but there's still... And it's always women in their 50s.
Really?
I did a wedding for a guy only a few weeks ago. I had my bum squeezed 7 times that night.
You were in the Stormtrooper outfit.
This is sexual harassment of Stormtroopers.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that?
That's not been regulated for in the Death Star. That's not something you see in the film.
I got home and Becky said, how was it? I said, 7... Women squeezed my bum.
There should be rules against these things.
It's
There are. There's got to be a law, but that's tricky to enforce, I imagine. Because then, by the time you've taken the helmet off and then they've done a runner and you're there.
Oh, could just shoot them.
You could do that. Yeah, you'd need... That's the solution, isn't it?
Blasting them.
I was going to say active phasers, but that's a different thing, isn't it? Star Trek. Gosh, close enough. It was close.
So the other week I did a funeral and the chap... that the funeral was for was a great guy who'd raised thousands of pounds for Great Ormond Street. He'd passed away in his 50s and his family wanted to recognise this part of him, and we went in our Stormtrooper armour. We walked down the very long driveway from the entrance of the graveyard all the way up to the crematorium, and we helped carry in the coffin.
Wow.
And gave a salute, and it was really amazing to be in this place where it's a collision of my two worlds. I'm usually in that room at the front, leading it.
Yes.
But that day, and it was great because I got to talk to the guys who were there doing it with us about why I do what I do. And there's been one occasion at one particular event where one of the guys who plays Darth Vader was telling me about just what was going on with his relationship with his wife, and I got to put my hand on Darth Vader's shoulder and invite the Holy Spirit and say, God, would you be with him? And I loved that. Just so gentle and normal and okay for Darth Vader. He was very happy for me to do that.
Ministering to Darth Vader.
And I got invited, as we all did, to the premiere of The Last Jedi.
Oh,
and on the premiere of The Last Jedi, I saw him and I was able to say, how was it? And I got to pray with him on the red carpet of The Last Jedi. And so suddenly...
Yeah.
And... you know, some of the guys who I say would, you know, if they heard me say this, would probably go, that's not really appropriate, Chris, really. But being normal and being friends with people who are also into Star Wars has been a real wonderful place of being able to take what I believe into this fandom world. It's predominantly a male world.
It's good fun.
So comedian Noel James was before Chris Rogers there. His new book, that's Chris's, is called What If We Knew What God Knows About Us. We will have more on that and its potential filling content on a future episode with that vicar / stormtrooper. But here's another guest who's interested in where religion and entertainment mix, particularly humour, I would say. This is writer, speaker, webpreneur, Simon Jenkins. Simon's got a new book out too, Jumble Sales of the Apocalypse. But before that, Simon founded legendary website Ship of Fools. Simon Jenkins, hello.
Hello.
I'm here with Simon Jenkins. For those of you that aren't familiar with the oeuvre of Simon Jenkins, could you fill us in on the last few decades?
I didn't know I had an oeuvre.
Yeah, well, exactly. It turns out we all have an oeuvre. It's just what you do with it, I suppose.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So I left Theological College with a degree, and I decided that one of the things I really wanted to do was a magazine called Ship of Fools. And I had the name before the concept almost. You know, I loved the name. And the idea being that it would be a kind of satire on the Christian church, you know, looking at the kind of, not just the funny things that happen, but the terrible, awful things that have happened in church history and still happen, and sort of getting us all to be a bit self-critical about the Christian faith. And that sounds very unhumorous, but in fact, it turned out to be a very funny kind of journey.
Very popular, isn't it? And in fact, yeah. I was giving you full credit. I was reading Ship of Fools before I was ever thinking, I think, of doing comedy in any sort of professional capacity. So clearly, and let alone linking religion and comedy and trying to work out, even just trying to work out how you talk about religion and comedy in the same
room.
Yeah. I don't know, you know. Yeah. So I think, you know, you're one of the way pavers in terms of that.
You
know,
thank you.
It's tricky, isn't it? It's a tricky mix to get the two.
It's quite difficult because it doesn't naturally go together. I mean, if you look at the Bible, you know, the Bible has got its funny moments, but it doesn't have any funny moments at the expense of God, really. You know, there's not any, as far as I know, comedy which is directed towards God.
Yeah.
God laughs at the wicked, and he sort of, you know, when they say, "Well, we got great plans," God just laughs at their plans. Yeah. But it's kind of slightly unpleasant laughter. It's not necessarily hilarious. God is funny, but no one else is.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yes.
So how it works, you know, how you do comedy without it being in some sense disloyal or even blasphemous or whatever is an interesting
comedy question. From within, I suppose, you know, because it's easy to be from outside of the institution and give it a good kicking, but from being within inside and talking about it as a, but I really think it's a man-made institution, human-made, let's you know, be gender blind to this, exactly. In fairness, it's been mostly men who've got
it's
it wrong over the years,
men.
And that's probably the problem, you know.
Yeah.
But then you know, we are laughing at our attempts, I suppose, to get it right.
Malcolm Muggeridge, it's a lovely quote by Malcolm Muggeridge, who said, you know, comedy is the difference between human aspiration and human performance. And I think church, you know, because we aim so high in church, you know, we're worshipping God or we're wanting to serve God or take the message out or whatever it is, you know, we've got these very high aspirations, but we are, you know, kind of very fallible human beings, and we get it wrong, and then hilarious, unintentionally hilarious things start happening and the back pews start rocking with laughter. So, I mean, I think that's the greatest moments of church, when you get comedy, unintentional comedy creeping in.
Simon Jenkins just there. I'm doing a comedy show with Simon and with James Carey, formerly of this podcast. That's on this Friday at the Museum of Comedy, if you're very quick. Put on by SPCK, who publish books by all three of us. So come along if you are very snappy. Time for some previous guests, back by popular demand. Last episode, you'll have heard Gav Tight, a beatboxer who was there at the start. And his new website, BizKit, is for any, from amateur to pro, helping you to beat that box.
A lot of people have a little party piece, a sound they can do that they don't tell everybody about. In the UK scene, there's a lot of things they call jams. We call them jams, like a musical jam. And what happens is somebody will put out on the internet, "Oh, we're all meeting up in Birmingham city centre," and all these beatboxers will gather, and then they all just get in a circle and they just start beatboxing, and they do they call them ciphers, where you kind of go from one person to next, or they do patterns where two people beatbox and then the next two people beatbox and you kind of overlap, so there's a continuous piece of music. And it's just wonder. It's a wonderful thing. It's engaging. It crosses cultures. It's not just a young people thing. There's older people. There's kids. It's just, I think it's one of the most wonderful scenes. And what's been absolutely fantastic was to be there right in the beginning and shape the scene. Because we got in there right at the beginning and said, well, what do we want the scene of beatboxing to be about? And it's all about encouragement. You know, somebody gets on stage, they're not that great. You don't go, no, you're not that great. It's like, oh, well done, mate, for getting up. Well, I love that sound you made. How did you do that? You know, and it's about learning off each other. And I love that. And there's a real culture around the whole beatboxing scene.
So that community sort of spirit differs then from that idea of, because you've got the rap battle kind of thing, but obviously that's fun, and it's a battle for fun's sake, you know, but actually it's nice to know there's this genuine community behind it as well.
Yeah, there's a real genuine community, and it's a worldwide community. We're meeting all up in Berlin. It's the World Beatboxing Championship.
Okay.
There's team battles and group battles, and you've got the different kind of the winning beatboxers or the top beatboxers from each country all enter, and we all know each other, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful event. And we all look forward to these kind of like annual gatherings where we can all get together and chat, and it's a lovely culture.
So do you have people then who where you don't share a common language, so you can't really communicate, but actually you can beatbox together, or you can do that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really nice about it too is that it's less so now. It's become much more of a solid art form where there's recognised sounds and ways of doing things. But back when we started, I helped organise the first World Beatboxing Convention not that long ago, only 2003, and we booked a venue in London, and we just put the word out on the internet and said, anybody want to come? And people came from all over the world. These beatboxers just turned up. And what was amazing, because they'd been all in isolation, they'd all had different ways of making sounds. They had different ways.
Yes.
And we were all learning off each other. And I remember Alien D, a beatboxer from Spain, and he did this kind of snare drum. And I was like, how do you do that? I've never heard. What are you doing? And it turned out to be what's called an injective, using your throat, which is this kind of sound, which is not breathing in.
Okay.
And at the same time, sucking air through his teeth to make that snare drum. And I was like, that's amazing. And it was just this lovely melee of learning and creativity.
I've been saving it back, but on a future episode, we will have Gav Tite teaching me how to beatbox. Yeah, we'll hold that in reserve just for now, I think. We have an occasional bring a bottle segment on this podcast where you bring something to the party, to the podcast party. This month, all we ask, your bring a bottle segment, head to a website of one of our guests. It's a simple ask. Costs you nothing but a minute of your time. There's chrisrogers.co.uk for what he's up to, more in his book. Shipoffools.com. That's Simon Jenkins' magazine of Christian unrest, as he calls it. NoelJames.co.uk for more of the Welsh wonder. Hey, PaulCarenza.com, why not, for what I'm up to. My Yule blog, you can see from last year. Gig dates, indeed. Or ComediansandCarols.com for more of that. BuzzKit.com, that's BZZKTT.com, is Gav Tite's, where you can give beatboxing a go yourself. I just have. It's fun and easy for children, for adults, for anyone who wants to learn more about how those sounds all fit together. Or the website of our next guest, PaulBellMusic.com. He's a songsmith known for his Biscuit song, not Buzzkit, but Biscuit. We will hear from Paul in a mo, alongside comic Nathan Ramsden-Locke. Paul's new album, First Light, has no song about biscuits, but it does have songs like this, Even When You're Gone.
We don't get to know the differences we make. It's just the rules of the game. Some things are kept hidden for all I say. Some things we should share before it gets too late. And even when you're gone, your love lives on. Even when you're gone, your love lives on.
So people can buy your album, Paul Bell.
Yeah, PaulBellMusic.com.
PaulBellMusic.com. Yeah. Are there other Paul Bells that, there's like PaulBellPlumber.com and Paul Bell.
I think there are, yeah. We haven't had a Paul Bell convention. there's at least one other Paul Bell. In fact, there's one other Paul Bell musician.
I know.
So when you look in, if you search for me in Spotify or whatever, there's my albums are there, and then there's some albums by a different Paul Bell that I think are quite different.
I'd imagine so.
I've not listened to
it. Okay.
I don't think he's got a Biscuit song, certainly.
Well, there you are. There you are. Nathan Ramsden Locke.
A lot of people comment on the fact that my comedy's family friendly and completely clean. Mm. I do have one crude joke. Do you want to hear it?
Okay, go on. Yeah, for us. Yeah.
Oil.
Oh, man.
That was very slick.
Do you know what? Oh, slick. There you go. Look at this. So that's not like nice one word, one syllable punchline. Yeah. And earlier, on an earlier episode of this podcast, we had Tim Vine. I said to Tim, what's your shortest joke? And he said he had a one word joke, which is he walks in with a pair of shears and just goes, cheers. That's it. But then as he himself spotted, he said, actually, that's one word and a picture, really, isn't it? And a picture paints 1,000 words. So that joke's 1,001 words long. So actually, it's probably his longest joke. So it's brevity is the form of wit, and so therefore we should probably stop talking, shouldn't we? Paul and Nathan, thank you.
Thank you.
Godspeed. Wish you well out there performing on the pun and biscuit music circuits, respectively.
Oh, goodbyes already. Well, I suppose we're nearing the end of October's podcast then. We'll have another proper one in November. And then in December, when this drip drip of rain you can hear becomes ice, we'll have my Christmas special, which inevitably does the opposite of normal Christmas specials, which cram in extra guests. I cram in fewer, because we already have 7 at the time. You can't have more than 7. So I think we'll just geek out about Christmas past. Or for a flavour of that, you could get my festive history book, Hark, the Biography of Christmas, or come and see my Christmas talk in Guildford, Woking or Hinckley, all on paulcrenza.com, or indeed my new Christmas play, Three Wise Men, hits Guildford Friday 7th of December. That's the only performance lined up for this, so do make the effort, make the journey. Hey, make Christmas. Oh, that's the sort of cheesy line you will not find in Three Wise Men, which is far more curated. Guildford, December 7th, that's a Friday night, followed immediately by my one-man Comedy and Carols show. But I digress a lot, always. You know that by now. Next episode will feature more from comedian Tony Vino. Oh, and here he is now.
Where's your next gig? Is it Australia, Fiji, Tahiti?
Yeah, next month I'm going to Rhodes.
Rhodes,
a thing called Sensatori. So that's in about a couple of weeks. So
Rhodes, we don't need Rhodes.
There's no roads to get to Rhodes. Yeah. I've not been there since I was 18. I went with my uncle. I'm half Scottish, so my uncle Rab.
Right.
You know, I went with him, and we didn't get on.
Oh.
We didn't get on. I remember it was my, how old was it? It was my 20th birthday. And we had an argument.
Yeah.
And he didn't know it was my birthday. And it was the end of the night. And I remember just saying, it was like really passive aggressive. And he'd complained about me or something. And then I just went, oh, by the way, it was my birthday today.
Oh, man.
And I just went to bed. Oh. I thought, that was, at the time, that seemed like, we both felt depressed, and that for me was a moral victory. But
that was Rhodes.
That was Rhodes. So that was 20, I just turned 40 last month.
Well, do you know what? I went to Rhodes as a student, pretty similar sort of time, and I had the worst holiday, because I went with, it was 3 couples, right? And I was, me and my girlfriend were one of those couples.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend dumped me on day 2 of this week-long holiday. And we thought, to make it less awkward for others, we'd just pretend we're still together for the rest of the week. But we'd, you know, be out sort of jolly together, but not very coupley. And then we'd go back in the room and just sulk and argue and, get through the week. And we told them on the flight home. And they were like, what? So you spent the whole week just going, annoyed.
Annoyed, just, pretending.
Just really not enjoying this holiday in any way at all. So maybe Rhodes has a special place in our hearts from 20 years ago for failed
this
holidays.
If you want to dump someone, I mean, Rhodes is our destination, but I mean, she could have left it to day 4.
Yeah.
Like, she was keen to get it over with.
Nip it in the bud early on, you know.
Yeah. Was there something you did on the plane on the way over there?
I think it clearly been brewing a while, but unfortunately we booked the tickets by that point. I think she probably wanted to bail her. It's not refundable. We better have a holiday. And
this is the time before you could just text someone or, you know, like Facebook.
Exactly,
there's no WhatsApp, you know, back in those days. You had to sit on a plane and then make the trip. Bless her.
I know, but you live and learn. Well, we hope that your trip to Rhodes is less eventful.
I won't take my wife now.
Exactly,
just in case.
It's a bit cursed.
So Tony makes our 7th guest. That's what we promise you, 7 guests. And that's 7. So it's time to go, which means farewell to our headliner this month, comedian and BGT semi-finalist Noel James. Godspeed to your career. You know, this is it. Come on, back to it again. Now everyone knows Noel James.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
this
well,
because you're going to keep. You've got Steve Best car to use, so you've got to keep on.
I've got to use the car.
You've got to get out there.
I mean, I don't know how to keep the momentum going, Paul. But you know, as long as I keep busy and keep doing gigs, obviously, if I need to perhaps sit down and try and write something as well, you know. But
thank you for joining the podcast.
No problem.
This has been the Heptagon Club podcast with.
So I feel like 2 peas in a podcast. Yeah.
Come on, man.
Have it. There you go. That's the sort of gold you get with Noel James.
Yeah, that is tarnished.
There you go.
Britain has indeed got talent.
Woo!
Beyond the final, absolutely.
Yeah.
Good man.
I also did Britain's Got Talents with where I had a bird of prey on my shoulder.
In fact, the calls are out for that one. Yeah. And farewell to Stormtrooper vicar, Spring Harvest speaker, beard wearer, and author Chris Rogers. What If We Knew What God Knows About Us? That's his book. More on that next episode.
So the book's out now.
Out now, yeah.
Out now. Brilliant. And if there's hope for a stormtrooper, there's hope for all of us, I imagine. Yeah. You know,
so. And if anybody wants a stormtrooper to speak on What If God Knows About Us, do you know what? That niche market, I've got it covered.
I know a guy. I know the guy. Presumably the only guy, yeah. I would imagine. I love the fact that the funeral, you say you could have taken off the helmet and then delivered the rest of the funeral.
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you this funny story. Yeah. So last year, I get invited to go to a wedding to be a bridesmaid. For a wedding,
okay.
They come to the 501st and say, would anybody like to be bridesmaids at our wedding?
Stormtrooper bridesmaids.
Only one sign up, and they come to me and say, Chris, you're a Christian, you get these things, do you want to go? So I go to this wedding, and I walk in, and I walk to the front, and the church leader of this church just turns out to be a member of a group that come to Spring Harvest. And he says, oh, Chris, are you here to speak? No. Are you praying? What, are you doing something in the wedding? And I said, well, actually, I'm the bridesmaid. I'm the stormtrooper walking them down the aisle. And he said, I cannot believe that Chris, who speaks at Spring Harvest, is going to be at this wedding and nobody will have a clue. And I got to walk this girl down the aisle and then walk out again. And then during the reception walk around, we arrested a few people.
Nice.
Bad behaviour. Darth Vader doesn't accept that stuff. Yes. And I love it because nobody knew who I was or what I was doing. I was just a stormtrooper.
That's great.
And I love it because they don't know who's under the mask.
Of course.
This makes it so fun.
And in theory, you could at the end take the mask off.
Yeah.
I was just imagining that, what was that show years ago? Was it, am I thinking of Beatles About? Is that what I'm thinking of? Where Jeremy Beadle would be in disguise and then take off the thing. Or was it Noel's head? Either way, it's the beard that's throwing me. Clearly, I'm thinking of bearded people in the past who've done hidden camera things on telly.
Impossible Mission, where they peel off faces?
It might be. There's something like, I'm sure Noel Edmonds with the Gotchas on Noel's house party used to, you know, the stormtrooper helmet would have come off and revealed, oh, it's me, grabs the microphone, oh, it's me, we caught you out, sort of thing. I'm sure Beadle used to do the same as well with Beadle's About. But either way, it always used to be people with beards trying to be in disguise, which you can't disguise a beard too well.
Maybe a beard is disguise.
Maybe it is. There's the next book. There you go. Chris Rogers, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank
you. Godspeed to you and all your stormtrooping and book writing ways.
Yeah, well, if you need a stormtrooper, let me know.
And thank you to all of our guests. That's it for October 2018. Go forth, meet other people, have a cracking month. I'm on Twitter, at Paul Carenza. We have a Heptagon Club Facebook page. You can find us there. Your reviews and ratings, 5 stars, always lovely. Ever so appreciated. It really helps us get boosted by Apple. So do help us out. Do rate us. Do write a little review if you can. Help us out even more by chucking us some dosh at heptagonclub.co.uk or buy a book from one of our guests, or indeed from me. My new one is What Are They Doing Down There? Out this very week. All of our guests, by the way, ever, way back to Miranda Hart and Milton Jones, if they've got a book, they go on our Amazon guests list. That link is on the Facebook page, Heptagon Club. You will see an assembled cluster of books by any pod guest who has got a book out. You can get them all there.
Hey, has anybody said to you today?
We encourage books. We encourage you to grab one.
Has made the world a better place.
Or indeed, an album from, say, Paul Bell, our guest this month. Or Rob Halligan, whose music you now hear. Thank you, Rob, for the theme music. Thank you for listening, and now be gone with you. More in a month. Ta-ra for now.